I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 17th, 2025, and I don't really have an introductory statement today, so let's just dive in. This builds on a theme that I highlighted in the first of two videos I put out yesterday about the fact that you have no property rights here in Canada. Kinew, Wabkinew, Premier of Manitoba, which is the province directly east of Saskatchewan for my American audience, Kinew targets private property to appease protesters, not solve problems. The Manitoba government is preparing to expropriate privately owned land known by the name, by some, as LeMay Forest, a name that suggests it's protected wilderness. It's not. It's private property. It's legally owned. It has development permits. Yet the premier now wants to seize it and turn it into a provincial park. Premier Wabkinew made the announcement casually during a Manitoba Hydro press event, as though expropriation were a routine government service like road repairs. "I want the chainsaws to stop," he said, and just like that. There was no consultation with the owner, no legal filings, and no transparency about the cost or process. This isn't policymaking, it's political theater. It is much more than political theater. This is the nation that you live in. The CCFR case, as I highlighted yesterday, proves you have no property rights in this country. And it's not just the Governor General who can seize your so-called property. It's also your premiers, your politicians, people like Wabkinew. Back to the article, the land belongs to Tokol Developments. But does it really? Does any land belong to anybody? Or do you just hold some kind of title to it? Some kind of document that says you can occupy it until your political leaders decide that they need it more than you? The representative planner, John Winthrop, said he only learned about the government's intentions through the media. No call, no email, no formal notice. Just a public ambush. And let's be clear, the land has been zoned and approved for housing development, including thousands of much-needed homes. So here's the contradiction. The premier says there's a housing crisis, but when someone wants to build a house and there's activists that are making a bunch of noise, the premier is more than willing to step in and seize private property. This is all legal. Now, there may be a prolonged court process, but there's nothing inherently illegal about the government just arbitrarily seizing property. That's the Canada that you live in. The premier is setting a dangerous precedent, this from the article. If you yell loud enough, disrupt the rule of law, and ignore court orders, you'll get what you want. But this is nothing new, and the precedent has already been set. That's why he feels emboldened to do this. Let's be reasonable for a minute. If I put a sign on my lawn that says Kevin's Forest, this is the name of the author of the article, would the government step in to maintain it? Would they reduce my taxes? Would protesters be allowed to block the sidewalk and call it an environmental sanctuary? Of course not. Yet somehow the government and even parts of the media have adopted this manufactured label, LeMay Forest, as if it's official policy. The land isn't a forest. It's private land zoned for residential development in a growing city. This is a troubling shift toward ideology over common sense. Well, when you elected an NDP government in Manitoba, you should have expected a healthy dose of ideology would come with it. This is the same bullet that we ducked here in Saskatchewan, but Saskatchewan is not free of its own problems. Let's talk about one of them right now. This, an article from the Western Standard, highlights one of the hearts of darkness right here in Saskatchewan, and that is the Regina Public School Board. Regina Public Schools' sham consultation betrays parents and calls them caregivers. The board's claim of legitimate feedback is a lie. It's a loyalty test to enforce compliance. Now, Regina is controlled by the NDP, controlled by the opposition here in Saskatchewan. As a mother of six with four children in Regina Public Schools, I have always believed schools should defer to parents when it comes to making decisions on behalf of our kids. But the Regina Public School Division's so-called consultation on administrative procedure number 354 regarding washroom and change room accessibility has shattered that trust. This grotesque attempt to engage parents isn't consultation, it's coercion. And the Saskatchewan government must step in to fire this rogue board. The board's letter sent to grades 9 and 12 students, 9 through 12 students, caregivers and employees, starts with a slap in the face. They call us caregivers, not parents. This is all in regards to the bathroom policy. The province has decided to download decision-making on this to the school boards themselves. Now, the good news is that the majority of school boards in this province are controlled by far more sane people than reside in this Regina region. But they want a pack. They want to guarantee access of males to female spaces, including children's spaces, as part of their march towards equality. I've highlighted how this gender ideology is firmly entrenched right here in Saskatchewan in the form of the NDP. It's not the NDP of former governments under Romano or back before it was the NDP under Tommy Douglas. This is a very different variant of the NDP. This is a godless variant, and they support policies which many believe are abusive towards children. The board's claim of seeking legitimate feedback is a lie. It's a loyalty test to enforce compliance. Regina Public Schools hides behind the Canadian and Saskatchewan human rights codes, wielding them like a weapon to push their radical gender theory. They warn that feedback suggesting infringement of legislated human rights will be ignored. Translation, if we question their gender-neutral washroom push, we're bigots whose voice doesn't deserve account. Now, in the late stages of the Saskatchewan election, once again, the Saskatchewan Party talked about dealing with this, and then as soon as they won the election, they said it wasn't a priority right away to ensure it. I think it's time, long since past time, the SAS Party acts on this, and there's another issue that is cropping up in Saskatchewan, and that's Saskatchewan to end grade 12 provincial exams. The Saskatchewan government will discontinue grade 12 provincial examinations as of August 2025, creating what officials call a fair system for graduating students. Now, in Saskatchewan, there's an organization called the Saskatchewan Home-Based Educators. This is for homeschooling. Homeschooling is very strong here. There is legislation on the books that guarantees and protects homeschoolers from the inroads of representatives of the public sector unions or radical ideologists like exist down in Regina. Now, the problem is this is a sudden elimination of departmental exams. Homeschoolers rely on being able to challenge these exams when their children reach the age of graduation. So you challenge the exam, you write it, you pass it, and you get your grade 12 diploma or equivalent. When you take these exams away, what they're essentially doing to homeschoolers is forcing them to either register for long-distance learning or send their kids to high school if they want to pursue post-secondary education with a certificate of a grade 12 equivalent. So they've shut this door, and this came down very suddenly. So I'm just going to read the statement from SHBE, and hopefully some Saskatchewan residents will wake up to this and contact homeschoolers so that we can get in touch with our MLAs and with our Minister of Education and maybe fix this problem. I'm writing today to ensure you that we are aware of the recent decision by the Saskatchewan Ministry of Education to discontinue provincial grade 12 exams. While the government has stated that this change will create a more equitable system, the reality is that it eliminates a critical pathway for homeschoolers and adult learners. Not just homeschoolers, adult learners too. For many years, homeschooling families have relied on the ability to challenge provincial exams to obtain level 30 credits necessary for post-secondary education. While SHBE is actively engaged with the Minister of Education, perhaps our best chance of impacting change on this issue is for each of you to reach out to your MLA or to the Minister of Education. Below is a sample letter. This is an example of the kind of change that can slip under the rug, especially in other parts of the country. Now, the Saskatchewan Party and the Saskatchewan government are very often responsive to the feedback of the public. So I am hopeful that this issue will get rectified. But even in a climate where there are things that this government does that I celebrate on a daily basis on this show, on this podcast, whatever this is, you still have to be vigilant, you still have to be communicative, and be thankful that you have a government that is somewhat responsive. But don't take it for granted. This last election that happened here, think back to Wab Kinew. The NDP came within 2,000 votes of winning, even though they lost the popular vote by something like 12%. 2,000 votes in four different ridings, and all of a sudden you're being governed by the minority, and all the extremism of Manitoba and all the extremism of gender ideology becomes official government policy. So be thankful you dodged a bullet, but be vigilant. If this affects you or it affects someone you care about, take the time to get in touch with your MLA. Take the time to write the minister. and indicate your concerns. As regards the Regina Public School Board, there is a petition. If you go to firetheschoolboard.com, you will find this statement. We, the undersigned, parents and citizens, demand immediate action in response to the alarming revelations from the Saskatchewan's Privacy Commissioner, exposing Regina Public Schools' deliberate attempts to undermine parental rights and conceal information. The commissioner's report reveals Regina Public Schools actively collaborated with ideological activists to strategize against concerned parents, the people who are paying the bills and sending their kids into this maw. They attempted to bury evidence behind an unjustifiable $29,270 fee and bogus privilege claims, an effort the commissioner explicitly condemned as reckless. This conduct violates the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Parental Rights, Saskatchewan Human Rights Codes, Discrimination Protection, Saskatchewan Education Act, Duties to Families, SSBA Governance Standards, Transparency and Respect. The board has lost the public trust and can no longer serve our community with integrity. Minister Hindley, we urge you immediately dissolve the Regina Public School Board. Now, I don't know if the Saskatchewan Party has enough bravery to actually do this. For whatever reason, they believe that they can win back Regina politically, or they must hang on to it even though they've lost it already, and turn a blind eye to what is insidiously inserting itself into Saskatchewan. Now, as somebody who lived in Ontario, I can tell you where this goes. And any resident of BC can tell you the same thing. Once they get a toehold, they take everything. And before you know it, they're sending your kids down a road, an ideological road that leads to their eventual sterilization. Saskatchewan needs to put a stop to this, and I would remind the Sask Party that your base strongly voted for you to stop this. So let's hope we can see some action. And further to Saskatchewan, what I look at as a favorable development, Saskatchewan looking to categorize fentanyl, meth, and hypodermic needles as street weapons with new legislation. The provincial government has introduced legislation that will see fentanyl, methamphetamine, and hypodermic needles categorized as street weapons. Amendments to the Safe Public Spaces Act are expected to be passed in the legislature this spring and come into force during the summer. Once enforced, the act will enable municipalities and First Nations to opt into new rules to regulate possession, transportation, storage of items potentially used as street weapons, such as large knives, machetes, hypodermic needles, and bear spray. The province says it feels that categorizing illicit drugs and hypodermic needles as street weapons signals the significant risk the items present to public safety. There is nothing untrue there. This province, like every other province in this federation, has a huge drug and crime problem. And you're not going to deal with it if you keep this revolving door justice that has become a fixture and feature of our system under the Liberal NDP coalition at the federal level. Police often do their jobs and do them well. But the courts just take the violent offenders and turn them loose on the streets so that they can reoffend. The other issue is, which is highlighted in this article, Saskatoon's Prairie Harm Reduction Strategy people have expressed concerns that the new legislation, which was pitched in February as part of a package of rules targeting drug traffickers, could push more vulnerable drug users into homelessness and drive up rates of bloodborne infections. To look at needles as weapons, you know, possession charges and the loss of your income assistance, these are things that will affect people who are using substances in our community the most. We have got to stop caring so much about drug users who don't care at all about the rest of civil society, the very people who are making our lives hell to just function. They'll lose their welfare if they end up charged for carrying drugs and hypodermic needles. Why are we supposed to care about that? You make your choice. Addicts are not victims. Every single time they dose, they make a choice. And we need to stop treating them like somehow their decision to selfishly abuse drugs, to place themselves over everybody else, to do crime to get their next hit, is somehow the result of them being victimized by society. If we want our streets back, if we want our children to be able to play safely in public parks, if we want to be able to live our lives and enjoy a degree of safety and not have to worry every time my wife leaves with the kids, even in small town Saskatchewan. The thought enters the back of my mind that she may run into somebody that's unsavory. We need to start taking these people off the streets. They have abdicated their duty to look after themselves responsibly, let alone society. It's actually far more compassionate to remove them from society. It's compassionate to the people who are doing things right. Remove them from society, stick them in a treatment facility, run it as cheaply as possible, force them to dry out. That's what we need to do. This notion, which is taking us towards doling out hard drugs to addicts, giving them needles and safe places to use, decriminalizing so that they can use with abandon, as well as handing them welfare checks so that we pay for the purchase of their safe supply, this has got to end, because the failure of this thinking is all around us. It's time to change the channel. Moving on, I want to address the French language leaders debate, which happened last night. I'm much more interested in tonight's debate, probably for obvious reasons, but let's watch a couple clips anyway, starting with this one.
Hey, Alex Zoltan with True North. If you thought my friend's question was odd, you're going to love this one.
I'm glad you self-assessed that. Okay.
Underneath the surface of Mark Carney, with the sloped shoulders and the casual demeanor, I find there's a lot of repressed anger in his body language. I don't know if anybody else has caught this. And even some of the off-camera moments where he's instructing the crowd or instructing his handlers, this is a snappy kind of guy. But I digress.
How many genders are there?
In terms of sex, there are two. Thank you.
Now that's revolutionary for a liberal to have said out loud. It's amazing to me that there isn't wide-scale condemnation in the mainstream media for this level of bigotry that Mark Carney has engaged in, but we all know it's fake virtue signaling anyway. Let's continue.
My follow-up question then, do you believe that women, biological women, have the right to their own spaces, their own sports, their own change rooms, their own prisons, their own homeless shelters?
This is Canada.
It's good that he knows what country he's in. It might be hard to keep track of for him.
That, as a general objective, yes.
So there you have it. Yes, biological women should have their own spaces, but he's not done talking.
Where we value all Canadians for who they are, and we'll continue to do so. Thank you very much.
Good job, Alex Zoltan. Now, I don't often find it necessary to give much screen time to Jagmeet Singh. He's largely irrelevant. He has doomed the NDP. He's soon to be out of work, and they may not even have a single seat in the House of Commons when this is all said and done, but I'm going to give him just a touch of time today.
Would you reduce the number of immigrants to Canada in general?
Instead of answering with a simple yes or no, I would want to base our response on the facts. It is obvious that we need immigration. When I speak to Quebec farmers, they tell me, yes, we need immigrants to work on our farms. When I talk to small and medium businesses, they tell me that we need immigrants. The question is...
So what he's saying is we need cheap labor that we can exploit. In a video that I did this week, I talked about the trucking industry and how a lot of the people we are bringing into the country are essentially indentured and in a state of indentured servitude. They're underpaid. They're poorly trained. We send them out on the highways. They kill people and oftentimes kill themselves in the process. And they feel they have no other choice. I think there are many NDP faithful who would be genuinely surprised that their leader and their party supports the exploitative immigration practices that are ongoing in Canada right now. But on a separate note, this is from Viva Frey. How did they choose which translators they attributed to the candidates tonight? Seems it could have been politically motivated. They gave the British voice to the Bloc Québécois leader. They gave a rather effeminate voice for Pierre Poilievre. And they arguably gave the most manly, dignified voice to Mark Carney, who picked the translators for the candidates. It's no secret that the media party in this country has it in for the Conservative Party of Canada. It's no secret that the bureaucracy and the public sector unions are very much afraid of the Conservative Party of Canada, even though Pierre Poilievre is promising to completely defund the CBC at the same time as he is promising to keep Radio Canada going in Quebec when he is speaking French. I'm not really sure how that works. These are all existential threats to the system, which has largely captured all of Canadian politics, the system which is driving this country right off the edge. I have no doubt in my mind that the choice of voices behind each politician for their translators is part of that subtle campaign to undermine the Conservative Party of Canada, which is ongoing as we speak. And this is setting aside the flaws with the Conservative Party of Canada, which I've highlighted in several of my videos. I keep getting asked by people, why do you never talk about the CPC? I do it all the time. I just talk about everything else as well. And here's a couple more things that I talk about. I made a post on X last night. We have to have a leaders' debate in French at the federal level, but Quebec doesn't have any in English at the provincial level. Bilingualism is imposed in Canada, but not on Quebec. When the mainstream media pundits whine about using the notwithstanding clause to keep violent criminals, repeat murderers in jail, using the notwithstanding clause for that, for justice, remember that Quebec discriminates as official policy. Language laws, language cops, sign police. They have their own individual character, culture, and ethnicity that they are trying to protect in Quebec, and good for them for doing it. But I have to wonder why we all stand in perpetual acceptance of the discrimination of Quebec, while in the rest of the country we are told we have to accept every kind of behavior from the aberrant to the normal. Actually, no, we discriminate against normal behavior. We only are told we have to accept all kinds of aberration in the rest of the country. Quebec just gets a blank pass. And so in response to my post, STV says, when a future Saskatchewan provincial election features a leaders' debate in French, then you will be allowed to complain about the absence of an English language leaders' debate in Quebec's provincial election, with an exclamation mark, false equivalency. My response was 13% of the population of Quebec has English as a first tongue. 1.6% of Saskatchewan, and I failed to put this in there, has French as a first tongue. Quebec has a whole country bending over backwards for official bilingualism, yet this guy thinks it's false equivalence. Quebec discriminates. You can be cool with it, but at least own it. And that's really all I ask for. I'm okay with a society discriminating. I've said that before. A society is defined more by what it says no to than an unmitigated yes. We need to learn in Canada how to say no more often and without shame, because this unrestricted yes that we engage in has completely corrupted and destroyed our culture and our society. It's undermining the very foundations all around us from every single direction. They talk about discriminating taste in wine and art, but you're not allowed to have discriminating taste in the building of a nation. Makes no sense. The last thing I want to address is this tweet from Brad from Ontario. Please stop blaming the PPC for the CPC's weak campaign. The CPC did this all by themselves with weak slogans and a liberal platform. The only reason they got as far as they did is because Pierre is somewhat entertaining. But now his routine is wearing thin. My response to this PPC bot is the CPC is riding at 40%. Even in these polls, which we may have reason to doubt. The PPC is at 1.7%. That's not fake. That is reality. Which party is weak? Which movement is weak? How many doors has Maxime Bernier knocked on in his own riding? While he's down south, campaigning like he's running for an American election, he's not up here doing his job, which is why he's going to lose in the Bows yet again. This is a man who used to win the Bows with 60% of the vote. Can't get elected dog catcher there now. The place where he's lived, arguably, most of his life. Everybody knows. He's a known quantity. There's this idea that Bernier isn't known, that if he just had more exposure. Canada knows him. He's already a household name. He's been rejected because the majority of people, the 98%, whether you agree with them or not, have figured out the nature of the PPC. It's not designed to win. It's not supposed to win. It's a fundraising junket. It's a revenge party. Now, Poilievre, on the other hand, and the CPC that he leads, I don't understand how people can look at it and just make a categorical statement that they are copying every liberal policy. They're not. On criminal justice, they're different. On guns, they're different. On speech, they're different. On the World Economic Forum, they're different, whether you like it or not. On mandates, they've been different since before Polyev came along. As soon as O'Toole was fired and Bergen was brought in as interim leader, they became very fixated on lockdowns and mandates, and they tried to ban mandates in Parliament several times, and they failed because they didn't have the seats. But that's their position. When O'Toole was still leader, Polyev and Leslin Lewis took the risk of going to the convoy, which was expressly condemned by Aaron O'Toole. The party changed. Now, it may not have changed as much as you want. People say we need zero immigration. The PPC is calling for 150,000 a year. The CPC is calling for 250,000 a year. I think tapping the brakes is a worthwhile cause. And as I've said before, everybody is united in defeating the Conservative Party of Canada. The American podcasting groups are individuals are all trying to undermine the conservative movement. Tucker Carlson says the entire conservative movement in Canada is a scam. Now, why would he do that? What's the motivation here? We've seen, as I've showed on my channel, and as apparently Moose on the Loose created a very convenient graphic, which shows the financial linkages between Mark Carney, Donald Trump, and Elon Musk. We could all be getting scammed here. Now, the one thing I know is the media, the public sector unions, all the political parties, the fringe right, symbolized in Maxime Bernier, all they focus on all day is making sure the Conservative Party of Canada loses this election. That makes me automatically want to walk in the opposite direction. There are no guarantees under Mark Carney that you'll get the statehood that you believe in. There are guarantees that Western separatism will become stronger. That'll be my focus after April 28th if I find myself waking up under Mark Carney. It'll probably be my focus. Western autonomy will be my focus regardless of who wins the election. But let's just put some perspective on this. RFK Jr. couldn't win, so he abandoned his presidential ambitions to help Donald Trump topple the woke Biden-Harris administration. Now, Trump has his problems, too. As a matter of fact, let's just take a second and discuss one of those problems right now while we are here. The headline is, Trump administration fast-tracks controversial self-amplifying mRNA vaccine for H5N1 bird flu. The Trump administration has granted fast-track designation to a groundbreaking and controversial self-amplifying mRNA vaccine candidate targeting H5N1 avian flu. And you got to remember that the vaccine, which is developed by Arcturus Therapeutics, is now in phase one trials and has been positioned by federal health authorities as a frontline defense against a potential bird flu pandemic. So this is a solution to a problem that hasn't even really emerged yet. This is a solution to something that hasn't even manifested. The designation announced on April 10th was awarded by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in partnership with the Department of Health and Human Services, which, I would remind you, RFK Jr. is heading. The fast-track designation from the FDA expedites the review of drugs intended for serious life-threatening. The point is, this is the same mechanism that created and enabled Project Warp Speed. This is the Trump administration doing this. So for everybody that is deifying the Trump administration, this mRNA vaccine stuff is still getting fast-tracked. And to this date, Donald Trump has never admitted that the rollout of the COVID vaccine was a mistake. In fact, he stands on it. He's proud of it. It was one of the problems that RFK Jr. had with joining his administration. But back to the point, RFK Jr. did a logic test. He said to himself, I can run my presidential campaign and I can lose, or I can accept the open invitation of Donald Trump. I can become head of HHS. I can look at things like fluoride. I can look at things like vaccines. I can look at the additives in food, and maybe I can do a lot of good for a lot of people. I may not get everything I want, but I might be able to leave the world a better place and perhaps function as a check on stuff like this, because for whatever reason, Trump seems to believe in mRNA technology as it applies to vaccines. Everybody should be skeptical of this and should be glad that RFK is in there and maybe can make a difference. So back to the meme. Couldn't win, so he abandoned his presidential ambitions to help Donald Trump topple the woke Biden-Harris administration. Bernier couldn't win, so he does everything he can to demonize the CPC and help split votes and swing ridings for NDP and liberals. Now, there are those who say it's not a split vote or that it doesn't matter. Your vote is your vote. And in a way, you're right. But here's the issue. As I've highlighted on X many and many a time, proud PPC supporters are only so happy to show that they are depriving the Conservative Party of governance. They're happy to have Mark Carney in there. Bernier himself said the country will just have to live under Trudeau if he steals the election from the Conservative Party of Canada. I got to ask you, 7-8 years in now, millions of dollars raised and spent, a 2021 bump because of the lockdowns, completely evaporated in every single by-election. Every single measure, Bernier's lost support. The farce that he did in Manitoba, where he didn't even want to get out of his hotel room, where he lost 1 in 4 votes over the local guy. They might have been all to cobble together their first seat if a Frenchman from Quebec hadn't have displaced the local candidate who people might have been inclined to vote for. They didn't buy into it. Just like when he jumped from the Bows to run in York Centre in a by-election and lost that handily. Lost him whatever respect he had remaining in the Bows. What is Bernier doing? When are you going to hold him accountable? Talk about the Conservative Party and their many lost elections. Every time they lose an election, they get a new leader. Bernier just keeps losing everything. Spending your money. He's an absentee leader. He is campaigning in the United States. He is not knocking doors and bows. When I ran for the PPC in 2019, my message was very clear to Bernier. Every time I talked to him, go to bows. Spend the money in the bows. Knock on the doors there. Win that seat, because if you don't get your seat back, we don't have a snowball's chance in hell. Instead, he ran around the country. Instead, his HQ opposed everybody who was trying to help the EDAs get strengthened, to get stronger. People who were making helpful videos so that they could learn how to do Nation Builder were told to delete the videos and offer no assistance to those EDAs. Problems with registering on time EDAs with Elections Canada. They oppose development of a strong and thriving party. They fear their membership. They probably fear the membership because the membership, if it was enabled and had some power, might actually grow the party beyond the fringe that it occupies right now. They have no plan for victory, but they keep on going anyway. And they're more than happy to turn the country over to Carney. And the American podcasting community is more than happy to help them and amplify his message, which undermines the Conservative Party right here. They favor Carney. Is it because of the economic linkages between Carney, Trump, and Elon Musk? I don't know if that's the motivation. But I think, as Trump has said publicly, he is happier to deal with a liberal administration than conservative administration, probably because he knows Carney is going to fold like the sheets in your cupboard as soon as he's in office. And this will be a bad deal for you in Canada. Western Canada knows it, but Eastern Canada still seems to think the orange man is the greatest enemy in the room. No, it's the 10-year-old Liberal government that still sits underneath Mark Carney, the elevated, selected, farcically elected so-called leader of the Liberal movement. Come home to Canada from New York after 10 years. Come home to Canada after being a self-identified European. The central banker, the Brookfield man, G-fans with $140 trillion underneath them in assets, more than proud to put the oil industry and the energy industry on notice that they're going to go broke, that the only investments will flow to green companies, even as he pretends he's going to build a northern energy powerhouse. I don't know how people can't understand this election, and this election in particular, the biggest threat by any stretch is Mark Carney. I personally, with all of these things being said, cannot reward Carney with support, and I cannot do anything but vote for the CPC with all their weaknesses. I don't like them on Ukraine. I don't like the messaging that they've taken with Donald Trump. I've said it many a time. I wish Polyev just came out and blamed the Liberal Party for the destructive relationship we have with the United States. I think he got bad advice on his messaging. But likewise, people have all kinds of criticisms. He's riding at 40%. He's the only one that can win the election. He's the person who's playing the political game. You don't have to like politics. I don't like it very much. That's why I'm not involved in it. But if you're going to play politics, if you're going to be in the game, you want to have a plan to win. Bernier doesn't have a plan to win. He can say whatever he wants because he's never going to get power. Back to the original point. He's at 1.7%. The CPC is at 40%. Do the political math. And I aim to keep this one at shorter than 20 minutes, and as you can see, I failed miserably. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.